For any of our young listeners out there who are maybe thinking about being goalkeepers or are goalkeepers, what advice would you give them to be the next Aubrey Kingsbury?
Don't be afraid to make mistakes. As goalkeepers, the expectation is almost perfection. The more mistakes you make, the more you can learn. So the quicker you can improve and get better. I hate getting scored on. I'll only let that anger motivate me to do better and not to beat myself down. Bounce back, get better for it.
Welcome to the next episode of Ditto. Super excited to welcome my teammate and friend, Aubrey Kingsbury, onto the show. Aubrey, thanks so much for joining us.
Yeah, of course, Hatch. I'm so excited for you to kick off this project and honored to be one of your first guests.
Yes, we are honored. Before we get into your bio, which we have a lovely bio that I cannot wait to read because I love bragging about my teammates, I'm going to go grab something real quick. So, Matt, take care of Aubrey just real quick.
Okay, here we go.
Is this a setup?
I don't know. I maybe we'll see here in just a minute. Aubrey, how's the day gone so far?
Great. I did a little yard work. Chilling. Ooh. I'm a little nervous for what she's going to bring back, though.
I guess we'll find out here in like T-minus.
Oh, I'm going to put 10.
Do you know what it is?
Oh, look at that. Purple. How'd you get that? Wow. Fans are going to be jealous.
Yeah.
Imagine red bones.
I know. Wow. I don't get to keep this.
You have to return it back.
Yeah. I know some people at the Spirit. Jordan Small.
Oh, my gosh.
I'm wearing purple as well, just so you can see. We're all wearing purple today.
Yeah. Purple is the color for today.
It was totally on purpose.
Yes. Matt showed up with a purple shirt. For our listeners, I just put on Aubrey's jersey. So Matt just showed up in a purple shirt, and I was like, wow, that's very fitting.
I actually thought you were going to come back with your WOE medal for beating me in the grand final.
That would have been better. Next episode. That's the first time we officially met, right? It was after grand
after
final.
You beat me. I think it was like, oh, we're going to be teammates. I'll see you in like a week.
Yeah. You shook my hand and you were like, hey, teammate. I was like, hey. Awesome. All right. Well, now that we've got this sorted,
nice.
I'm gonna read your bio for our fans, just in case they live under a rock and don't know who you are. All right. Aubrey Kingsbury, originally from Cincinnati, Ohio, Aubrey is one of the most accomplished goalkeepers in NWSL history, with not one but two Goalkeeper of the Year awards, an NWSL championship, and an NWSL championship MVP. At the international level, Aubrey has frequently been called up to the United States women's national team over the past few years, even representing her country at the 2023 FIFA Women's World Cup. After a successful college career at Wake Forest, Aubrey turned pro and has played in Norway, Denmark, and Australia on top of her lengthy NWSL career. She is currently in her 10th NWSL season and has appeared in over 150 total NWSL competitions and tallied nearly 40 clean sheets. Off the pitch, she's an avid baker, which I can attest to, an amazing baker, and has recently earned her master's degree in business administration and hopes to combine the two in her next career after soccer.
Wow.
That's pretty impressive, Oz.
Welcome, Aubrey, to the show.
Yes.
Nice.
Awesome.
Thank you for that.
Matt and I were talking before the show, and we were kind of talking about how being a goalkeeper is a pretty unique position in soccer, right, Matt?
Very much so. So I'm sticking with Aubs. I got to get Aubrey. I see Aubrey on the screen, but it's Aubs. Okay. Before I ask this question, which I think there's a lot to unpack, I have a question before that. You ready?
Yeah.
Do you watch The Great British Baking Show on Netflix?
Oh, yeah. Yes. Big fan.
Is that not the best show?
So wholesome.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. Wholesome is such a great word to describe that show. It's my wife and I's like go to bed show, because you want to be in a wholesome, like positive frame of mind when you go to bed, right?
Yeah.
It's one of many like, okay, we're getting ready for bed. Let's put on Great British Baking Show for the next half hour. Right. We just like love it.
Certainly wouldn't rile you up or, you know, get you heated.
No. you have to be genuinely an amazing human being to be on that show. And it's so fun to watch, not to mention the bakes. What's been one of your more delicious bakes in recent memory?
Well, just last week, my niece turned 2. So my twin sister requested for a 2-year-old a lemon Biscoff cake with lemon curd and lemon buttercream. So
oh my gosh.
Clearly not the 2-year-old's request.
It was your sister.
My twin sister. So birthdays, I make pretty elaborate cakes. Like, you can't just have like the cake and the icing. There's got to be some sort of like texture or like a crunch layer. And So I would say that one comes to mind. I always make, or me and my family make a cake on Christmas. It's one of our traditions, another wholesome tradition. We make Jesus a birthday cake.
And I love it.
So, I mean, it's Jesus, right? You got to go big. So, we've done some like s'mores cakes, like a gingerbread latte cake. Like, those are always pretty fun.
You don't put loaves of fish on the cake or anything?
I haven't tried that yet, but maybe.
I'm not sure that would be very good. Yeah.
Maybe you could just decorate it with Swedish fish.
Oh, there you go. Idea. That could be good. Yeah. It's one of many things I think we have in common. I'm also a twin. I have an identical twin brother. Wow. Is your sister identical or fraternal?
We think identical, but we're not sure.
Oh, okay. Cool. Yeah.
A lot alike, so.
Does she play soccer as well?
She did. She was a goalkeeper at Brown University, but didn't play professionally after that, although she probably could have. She became a teacher and is now a mom of 3.
Wow. Cool. Very cool. Okay. Goalkeeper. Now here's my next question that we can unpack, right? First off, is it keeper? Is it goalie? Or what's the other term they use? Keeper
or goaltender?
Don't say that. It's like chicken tender.
What do you like to be called?
I think technically it's a goalkeeper. Goalie is fine, although I think that's more hockey.
I think you're right. Hockey. Yeah, goalie sounds more hockey.
Yeah, or just keeper. So goalkeeper, keeper.
I am a soccer fan just in the last like 5 or 6 years. And so I'm still learning the game. Mm-hmm. From my understanding and the little that I know now in this 5-year journey of trying to understand the nuances of the game, you don't just like want or like go out for the keeper position. You kind of just fall into it somehow. I don't know how that dynamic or that fluidity happens or how that materializes. How did that happen for you? Why aren't you scoring goals as a forward, or why aren't you defending midfield, or what happened? Like, what? Why keeper for you?
The true story is probably because I wasn't good enough. So
I don't believe that.
I got moved to the back. Although I think that's changing. So the demands of a goalkeeper are different. Now you're more involved. You use your feet. Before, it was like the unathletic one who would just pick the daisies and, you know, wouldn't have to do much, right? And so I was kind of like everyone when I was younger would just take a turn. But me and my sister as well were just good overall athletes. I really, really liked basketball as well. Mm. So naturally, I was pretty good with my hands. And so I kind of got stuck there, and around maybe 13, 14, that age where you start to like sub less, I think I realized, hey, if I want to keep playing and possibly go play in college or just keep progressing, goalkeeper was my best shot. So I stayed there, but I wouldn't really say that I loved it. until like later college years and as a pro, when it was really like my choice to continue to play and not like just a means to get into a good school and to get a scholarship and to see the world, things like that. But I was actively like choosing to invest in my career and just getting to know the position and the game even better.
Yeah, no, I love it. It for me is a fascinating position for so many reasons. One overarching reason, at least in my mind, is the preparation that goes into being a goalkeeper. Every position on the field, I'm assuming, has a lot of preparation that goes into it, but it just seems different as a goalkeeper.
Yeah, it's our own sport, right? Sport within sport.
Yeah, physical, tactical standpoint, and then mental standpoint as well. So touch on, if you don't mind, or unpack, what is your preparation like for games and competitions from a physical standpoint and then a psychological as well? Both, I think, are just fascinating.
Yeah, certainly a lot to cover there. Yeah. Throughout the training week, my coach will tailor our training sessions to be what we'll see in the matches and the opponent's attacking tendencies and their strengths. So, for example, say they serve a lot of deeper crosses, like we'll see that. And then if they have a good header, we'll see that as well. We have like soccer rebounders that you kind of like, you know, bang off this board, because we certainly can't head. So we'll try to replicate what we're going to face leading up to the match. We'll watch video analysis of the opponents. So kind of the overall themes and tendencies, but also then the individual players are left-footed, right-footed. Do they shoot from the angles, from distance, just certain things like that. So it's all tailored to each opponent, each, you know, individual. So I'll watch that 2 days before the game, and then I'll kind of review either the night before or the day of and kind of refresh, just because for me, I like to feel like I'm going into a match and there are no surprises. Like everything that they're going to throw at us, I've kind of seen before or am anticipating to a certain extent. Like I'm certainly not like guessing, or I don't want to be kind of overreacting based on, you know, what I think they may or may not do. But it's more, I know what their strengths are. I know that I have the skills and abilities to kind of stop those, and can just have confidence knowing I've kind of already seen whatever they're gonna throw my way.
And is that in-game film that you're watching, PKs, all the above? I mean, is it?
Yeah, I was listening to some of Hatch's commentary about how she approaches penalties.
Taking notes.
It's so interesting.
She's probably, I would guess you're one of the more thorough, and I'm probably one of the more thorough, I would think, on the goalkeeper end, but also credit to our analyst team. They will dig through and find every penalty someone has taken.
Okay.
From their like college years till the present, which for some people is a lot. For some, it might just be, you know, one or two, but we'll kind of identify who we think would take the penalties, and then I'll watch their run up, see if there's any specific tells. Maybe they do something differently when they go to my left as compared to my right. And sometimes it's like, huh, I bet you they don't even know that. But, you know, if you have a lot of video and you can comb through, sometimes you can see patterns arise. But yeah, it's, I mean, at the end of the day, it's also some luck. I won't pretend that it's this beautiful science and odds and probabilities.
Yeah.
Like, it's a little bit of just intuition too, and kind of following your gut when it comes down to it.
Well, I was just going to ask you, based off that, how often are you right?
Not enough. I wish more. Well, the funny thing is, too, I think players know that I like do my homework, we'll say. So, for instance, last year, Savannah DeMello was awarded a penalty kick against us. Mm. She plays for Racing Louisville. And I'd seen her past 6 penalties, we'll say. She always went to my right. So I'm like, okay, well, looks like I got to anticipate, you know, and get a little jump to my right. Because if the reason to get a good jump is if penalty takers are putting it in the corners, you can't get there if you're reacting. You have to move just a little early. Just when their planned foot hits the ground, you want to get a jump. So, like, yeah, players like Hatch, you're never going to save anything, even if you're going the right way, unless you get a good jump. So, anyway, I go to my right, and what do you know? She goes to my left. And afterwards, I was like, I thought you liked keeping right side. And she's like, I knew you would think that.
What are you doing?
I switched it up. And I'm like, oh.
That's gotta be a compliment, though, because she knows that you're a very thorough goalkeeper and you do your homework. So I would take it as a compliment. And you definitely got her this last time. So I would say it's even.
So then, yeah, she's been going to keeper's left until I just saved it last game, because I was like, well, now she hasn't missed to the keeper's left, so maybe she's going to keep going there. So it's all, again, like, sometimes the numbers don't help you, right? Because it's like, 100% of the time she goes to the keeper's right. Well, then what does she do? She goes the other way. So, again, yeah, it's a little bit of luck, intuition, but just hopefully you can come up with a big save, because like we've seen with VAR, there's a lot of penalties this year in the league, so those are just big moments.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I love it. Now with the psychological stuff, which is something I'm biased towards, it's what's most fascinating for me. You know, preparation breeds a lot of different things in terms of the emotional and psychological experience for athletes. Mm-hmm. For you, what has all this preparation done physically for the mental and even emotional side of things?
Definitely breeds confidence. I especially like to be really fit. Like, clearly I don't have to run. I don't get high speed meters in the match. I'm not putting in 10K. But the more fit I am, it helps me mentally as well. Mm-hmm. So kind of just like the over preparing, like whether that be video, whether it be physical fitness in the gym, on the field, all those different things, just kind of practicing it throughout the week. The thing I like about being a goalkeeper is it's so individualized. Like, I can go to my coach and be like, hey, I really want to do this today, and you know, he'll do it. Like, I have my coach, so it blows my mind. It's actually like hard for me to imagine how the field players must feel after a session, because I'm like, she probably didn't even get to pass that much with her left today, or like, what if she's uneven, or she didn't get to shoot, or this or that. And I'm kind of like able to get a little bit of everything I need, like, every day. So I think that individualized aspect of it, like having your own coach who's dedicated to working with three people, you can really get to work and dig through the details and make sure that you're getting enough reps or seeing what you need to see to feel confident.
Yeah. It's interesting. I don't know if you've listened to our self-confidence episode, but we went over six different sources that in theory facilitate this idea of feeling self-confident, this belief in yourself. And one of them is physical preparation, the physical part of being a human being. And especially in your case, where your profession is so physical, it's going to ultimately and inevitably affect how you believe in your capabilities and believe in your performance. So fascinated me. Here's my last question in terms of, because this is just a random me putting myself in your shoes. You're really close to the fans, goalkeepers. Give me an experience or two where they've kind of been heckling and really gotten after you in terms of you hearing things or seeing things from the fans as a goalkeeper and trying to hopefully stay focused.
I'll say it was worse in college than the pros.
Yeah, playing UNC or somebody, or NC State.
Usually it was like the men's baseball team or men's hockey, football, whatever it was, you know, like right there. Like, you could get close at some of those college stadiums, and their insults were pretty funny. I've got a lot of personal ones, more about like, oh, your sister's better than you, or I know for sure I've like heard my address in the crowd in a college match. But honestly, I don't know if it goes back to just like keeper and being wired differently, and I really like enjoy it.
I don't know, like it kind of just helps me lock in even more. And I'll even kind of chuckle or laugh or even wave. like, that's clever. Like, thanks. Yeah, it's a little entertaining. Sometimes it like throws you off if you're about to kick and then like, you mm-hmm. know, they'll all like shout at the same time, like shank or I don't know, something like that. But yeah, if you like know it's coming, then it's like, okay, just, you know, focus on the ball and you can kind of drown them out. So I wouldn't say that there's any professional stadium where things have gotten out okay. of hand, but just in general, the louder it is, the more difficult it is for me to do my job to communicate with my defenders and just to help organize the defense. So that makes it difficult, but in terms of kind of getting in my head, I think I've kind of learned by now to just drown it out or just help it kind of keep me locked in. And it almost kind of fuels that, you know, the keeper's like the one trying to stop the other team and you're almost like the enemy, right? So mm-hmm. I think it almost fuels you like, oh, I'm really not gonna let y'all score on me now, you know? So yeah, it's fun. I think, you know, at the end of the day, it's all for entertainment and it just makes it more fun.
Is Seattle the toughest place to play in the NWSL? This question's for both of you. It seems like a rambunctious crowd, or where's the toughest place to play in the NWSL?
Portland and Angel City are probably the top. Angel City has usually got a really good crowd, and the two times we've been there, it's been pretty rowdy, but Portland's probably consistent. Is there any others, Obs, that you can
Those were the two I would say. The Spirit have never won at Portland, so...
Really?
There's that. Angel City's always very loud. Seattle's difficult because it's turf, as is Portland. Mm. So personally, not my favorite place to play, but it's a football stadium. It's the Seahawks stadium, so the fans are a bit further off of the pitch. So you don't feel like, you know, they're on top of you and creating that intense atmosphere that gives the home team some momentum. Where you see like most of the modern soccer stadiums. Like, I'm really excited to go play in Kansas City. I think that will probably be a difficult field to play in.
I think our home field is probably hard for opponents to come to because, like you said, it's a soccer specific stadium, so the fans are really close to the field, and especially when we have the thing almost full, the fans get super loud. I know last game it was a lot of fun, but it was also really hard to hear each other and direct each other. But it is helpful when they're all on your side, not going against you.
Totally.
Yeah. Well, thanks for sharing all those things about your preparation. I have another question about your more of the mental side of your preparation, because I've had the honor of being your roommate several times, and I know that there's this game that you like to play before trainings and before games. You put this like thing over your eyes. Looks like a virtual reality set. Can you explain to us like how that, what it is exactly, and how it maybe helps your mental preparation before trainings and before games, and maybe what the difference is before training and before games?
Mm-hmm. I got connected with this company called NeuroTrainer back in 2020. Mm. When sports took a hiatus, they were doing this competition to raise money for charity. So they sent me an Oculus VR headset, and it was loaded up with their software, NeuroTrainer. And it has different like training programs and then also like competitions. And it's for professional athletes primarily to help kind of vision training, impulse control, just kind of hand-eye coordination. So I'll put it on. I look like a total loser. I will try to find a private space or my hotel room. But the one that I play in particular, like my hands are kind of like I use them to like block or catch a ball. So there's these kind of balls that come at me and I need to catch them, or they're bombs and I need to like dodge them. Ooh. So for me, it's good. Again, the hand-eye coordination, left, right hand, like trying to get that perfect block And then also just like dodging the bombs and being able to like decipher quickly, like yes or no between ball, bomb, things like that. So it kind of just helps me lock in. I used to do it more before I would train, and felt like it was almost the same as like taking caffeine. Like, because when you're in one of those VR headsets, like it feels real. Like your whole kind of like your head, your hands, they vibrate and you like feel like, ah, I've been shot. And you just kind of practice, I think the emotional control for me too, to like go from being frustrated, like, oh, I just missed that bomb or ball, whatever, to then quickly like refocus because the next one's coming. So it's kind of a lot of mental reps that I would get in a game and training. It could be a long time from one shot to the next or just any sort of involvement. So the quicker I can practice like refocusing, resetting, and staying present, the better. So for me, just the 10 minutes or so I do before training or before a game kind of wakes me up, gets my kind of mind going, but then also again practices that emotional control.
Can you imagine that's what that room was like with Ashley in the Lotus and Obs with this Oculus on going like this? Somebody walking
meditating
through
that room on the ground.
Usually like Obs puts her Oculus thing on and I'm like sitting in the corner with my headphones on meditating, so we're both just giving each other space to mentally prepare for the game. So no, that's really cool. It sounds like it was something that was given to you just like kind of for fun to try out, and then like as you did it you're like, oh, I'm actually seeing the benefit of this, and something that you've kind of adopted into like your routine because you saw the benefit of it. Is that right?
Definitely. It was a charity competition and I've seen my it really affect my trainings, my games, and then within it you kind of compete and you get scores, and it adapts because, you know, it's not just the same kind of program, but it gets harder, gets faster as you go. So I'm always trying to beat myself or beat other people. You know, there's like a little leaderboard and I'm like, I don't know you, but I want to beat you.
I don't know you, but I'm going to kill you.
Yeah, you have no idea. I'm coming for you. But
that's awesome.
It's been great. Something I take with me on the road and do at least a couple times a week back in my home environment.
Well, I think it's pretty clear. I mean, it's always been clear to me, but it's probably clear to our audience now, and now Matt, as you guys have just met, that Aubrey thrives off of competition, which I think is probably one of the top reasons why you're at the top of your game and one of the most successful keepers in this league. But I want to dive in a little bit to your career and like the path that it took you to get to where you are now. As I shared in your bio, you played in Norway, you played in Denmark, you played at Sky Blue, and then, you know, got in the expansion draft, got traded to Orlando, and then lucky me got traded to the Spirit the same year I got traded to the Spirit. Throughout like your career, when you look back, especially, you know, playing overseas, I feel like that's something very unique. Not a lot of players have the opportunity or decide to take that leap of faith to go play overseas. Are there any lessons that you've learned like throughout your career that maybe have helped you now, or just experiences that you're really glad you had from going overseas and challenging yourself like early on in your career?
Yeah, I mean, so many lessons learned from each kind of stop on the journey. For me, I know, especially playing in Australia, that was more of like an off season loan. And that one, that was fun. I'm sure you can attest to it. Just the Australian culture, way of life was, a little more relaxed. And their league wasn't as strenuous, I'd say, as the NWSL. So that kind of taught me to enjoy it a little bit. I would go and kind of try new things. A funny story, maybe not so funny, but I was trying to side volley for years. So I'd go to Australia and only side volley, which is difficult. Like, you see all the men doing it, but like women's, like, I'm not convinced my hips work that way. It would come off like perfectly 1 out of every 5. And at one point my coach was like, I thought you had a good drop kick. And I was like,
oh no.
I'm outed. Because not that I was treating it as like a developmental league, but
yeah.
It was great for me to feel a little less pressure away totally. From the American media and
interesting.
Just kind of everyone who knew, you know, more about me and just the freedom I think I felt to try new things and not be afraid of making mistakes. So that was really nice. And I think I kind of took a little bit of that confidence back with me every NWSL season as I'd come back and be like, you know, I know how to enjoy the game. Like,
yeah.
Yeah. So a lot of times I think pressure and, just expectations for yourself and, yeah, that can kind of be my worst enemy is just my own, you know, I get in my own way. So going to Australia was just a nice kind of change of pace. I'm just trying to think of some other ones.
Totally. I mean, I can attest to that. I remember playing in Australia after my rookie season, and I kind of felt the same way. Like, the media pressure kind of wasn't there. No one really knew who I was. I was kind of playing anywhere the team wanted me to play, and it was just a new experience to kind of just play and, like, have fun. I think that's really important. I think going overseas is definitely something that provided that for me, so it's cool to hear that it provided that for you as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think, like, me and you, we're veterans. We've been around a long time. We've had great success. You've won the Golden Boot, right? So as we continue to climb this ladder, like, people's expectations of us and our expectations for ourselves are very high. And not like there's not much more room to grow, but maintaining that level, like, consistently is very difficult. And I don't think people understand that. But to be a top performer consistently, it's tough, you know. We're still human, we're still works in progress. So I think that speaks to both our careers to be able to still be here and on the top of our game, but it's difficult.
All I gotta say is ditto.
Yeah, right?
Like everything you're saying, like, yeah, it's so true, and it's really cool to hear you say that. And I think one thing and that you can probably attest to as well is I think it's important to just keep competing with yourself, because that's the only way you can continue to keep climbing is just competing with yourself, showing up every single day in training and trying to work on your side volley and master it, even if someone says you can't or whatever it is. So, and I think that's something that you're really, really good at in your career. You obviously weren't number one always. The goalkeepers, I feel like you guys have a very unique path, and I think that's why it's really cool to see, like, where you started and where you are now. Going from being a backup keeper to then finally getting the number one spot, how was that transition for you? And was it hard to be a backup keeper? Was your mindset more of just like, I got to buy my time, this is how it works? Because you're obviously a very competitive person. What did that transition look like for you?
I'd say I felt like there probably wasn't going to be that big of a jump from college to pros. But then when I got to the pros, I was like, oh, yeah, this isn't college anymore. So I kind of realized I still had a lot to learn and a lot of room to grow. So there wasn't really, although I would have loved to have started right away, I didn't have that expectation. And for me, I kind of viewed it as the longer I stay as the backup, the more prepared I am, the more ready I'll be when my opportunity comes. Although on the flip side, I will say that as a goalkeeper, since it's not like you're getting like 10 minutes at the end of the game, you can go years without ever touching the field. It's also difficult to stay mentally sharp and ready because then those doubts start to creep in. It's like, oh, I actually haven't played a game in 2 years. Am I ready? it's important to give, you know, young goalkeepers minutes, whether that be in scrimmages or, just meaningful minutes just for development. But going overseas and getting all those games definitely made me more confident than coming back to the NWSL. I was behind Ashton Harris in Orlando for 2 years, and she was one of the best goalkeepers in the country, in the world at the time. And I would say she was one of the more modern keepers and doing a lot of techniques that you now see women doing. 1v1 techniques, we call them, you know, like a spread or a block save, kind of where you, you know, do a big starfish. But yeah, she was one of the first to do that. So I think that was a really incredible opportunity for me. I was young, just to watch her, to learn from her. And then she just happened to tear her quad taking a routine goal kick, and that was my opportunity. So yeah, you never know when it'll come. It could be an injury, it could be a red card, it could be anything, but it's just so important to stay ready and to believe that I can do the same things that the starter's doing. Like, I have confidence from training, like, just to continue to visualize yourself in that role. I kind of learned that that was important, and so I try to teach that to the younger ones now, that there's not this big divide between, like, me and them, but, like, you know, getting the confidence from training and staying ready, because you never know when your day will come.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a really good mindset, and you're really good at it. So thanks for being such a great example to all of us and leading the way for our team, but also for keepers below you. I think it's such a unique position, and we don't talk about it a lot or enough. It's really hard. And I think one thing that I thought of, I feel like I've heard you say this before, but practice is almost like is your guys' game days, because you do so much more.
Yeah.
Our cadence of training is so much different than y'all's cadence of training. Can you go through a little bit of like the periodization? Because I know, like, for us, you know, we start off the week with, we have like an off day, a recovery day, and then we kind of like ramp up, and then as game days come, we ramp down. What does the periodization look like for you guys as goalkeepers, since your game days look a little bit different in regards to loading?
Yeah. Game days for me will be mentally taxing, but physically it's kind of, you know, just a 3-mile walk. unless I have to hit a lot of long balls, then like maybe my hip flexor will be tight, but that's about it. So we'll go in usually the day after the game and do a recovery session. And so sometimes I will train the day after the game, just depending on if I slept or how late we were at the stadium. And then we're all off match day plus two. And then when we come back in, us keepers really ramp it up the first couple days back. So we'll say, like, you know, Tuesday or Wednesday, and then we'll all start trying or kind of cooling it down Thursday and Friday. But yeah, the beginning of the week, we really have heavier loads, whereas you guys are still kind of recovering from the match load. We're ready to to go back up, because we know end of the week, it'll be lower again. But yeah, it's hard to know exactly what loading is right for keepers, because you're not going based off of the game demands, right? Like, if that was the case, you wouldn't really have to train.
Yeah.
So I know for all of our scientific staff, I'm an anomaly. They're not quite sure what to do with me, because I always want to do more, and they're like, yeah. What about your data?
Aubrey's like, what data? I feel fine. Yeah, let's go.
Exactly.
After every game, it's hilarious.
Yeah.
Nice.
Awesome. Really cool. Aubrey, I want to ask you some personal questions, if you don't mind.
Sure.
Okay, you ready? In recently looking at your Instagram, I noticed a scripture at the very top. This is something that is equally as fascinating for me as the psychology of sport, is the spiritual orientation or religious orientation for athletes. So could you share what kind of role spirituality and or religion has played in your development and just your overall kind of lived experience of being a professional athlete?
Yeah. I'm for sure. I'm a Christian. And, so I see my job as a calling. I believe the Lord has kind of put me exactly where I am with the Washington Spirit and has orchestrated all my steps to lead me here. And so just knowing that, it's super freeing. Yes, I work hard. I give my best every day. But ultimately, I know that He's kind of the one who produces, you know, the fruit, I'll say, and that he's got a plan for me regardless of what I do. Like, I can't ultimately mess it up because he's the one in control, not me. So that makes everything a lot more freeing. I kind of get to enjoy it a lot more.
Fascinating.
And it takes a lot of the pressure off as well in terms of, you know, maybe wondering, how long am I going to play? You know, I just hope that that'll be evident one day when I'm called to maybe do something else. But yeah, that's the short version of it is, yeah, my faith is why I play. So for me, it's kind of, a mission field in a sense. Like, I get to love my teammates. I get to serve those around me. And just make the most of where the Lord has put me at this particular time. And yeah. I love it. It's the best job.
It is the best job.
I love to hear it. And again, it's so interesting to me. I've interviewed quite a few athletes around this sphere of religion and spirituality and sport. And inevitably, there's always some sort of practice. It usually ends up being prayer, but sometimes it's different things. That's intertwined into pregame routines, postgame routines, whatever it might be. And so I want to ask you, what kind of practices spiritually, religiously, have you intertwined into your career, into your competition practices, et cetera? And how have they, like you said, facilitated this freeing experience? I love that adjective.
Yeah, I think for Christians, a lot of meditation is kind of a blurred line with prayer, or even, you know, my self-talk. It's less of self-talk and more of kind of like talking to God for me.
Totally.
Or just if I'm in the midst of a training or a game and frustrated with myself, just kind of like releasing it to Him, and just asking for, you know, strength or peace or focus, whatever it may be that I need. So yeah, for me, it's great to know that, I'm not looking to myself. Like, there is a source, that is greater than me, that sustains me and guides me. And, yeah, I have the Spirit living within me. So, again, that also takes more pressure. And, yeah, I know that I can't do anything on my own, that I, you know, need help. And so it's great to be able to pray and to ask for, you know, more of the fruits of the Spirit or more of, you know, any of the promises that, you know, the Lord says He'll give us. And yeah, I know Hatch can attest to that. We have a strong group of believers on the team. So it's nice to feel, not alone in that, but, there's a lot of us that, yeah, sport is kind of the avenue by which, you know, we glorify God.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Aubrey's great at helping us organize team Bible study and pregame prayer with our chaplains. So we're super grateful to Aubs and the example she is, but also her willingness to help us all get together and to organize us, because it is really important. And I think it's really cool to connect with other teammates who have similar beliefs, and just to help remind us that there's more to life than just soccer, because it can consume our lives. Like, as you can tell, like, all the preparation that Aubrey puts in day in, day out, if she wasn't intentional about, you know, her relationship with God, I feel like that relationship would struggle. And I think it's very clear to all those around her, that she just has this like light about her and this faith. And it's an honor to be your teammate, really. Aww. And it's fun to see and to see, have you as an example. So that's really cool. Thanks for sharing that. And yeah. Matt, thanks for asking the personal questions.
Yeah, of course. I have another one, actually, and this is for both of you.
Oh,
even better. Right. You ready? Obs, from my understanding, that just doesn't feel natural. I got to say Aubrey. Okay, Aubrey, you are recently-ish married? 2 years?
Yeah,
3 years?
About 2.5.
2.5 years. What's it like for both of you to bring your spouses along this journey of being a professional athlete? What are some of the challenges and the beauties that you've experienced?
Yeah.
We love the questions. Husbands Club.
Yeah, we do. It has been just a joy for me. Playing overseas, moving all the time. I didn't have the most hope that I would find a spouse before I quit playing. So my husband's also named Matt. So when I met Matt, and we got married late 2021.
Jeff and I were there. It was a great, beautiful wedding.
Thanks, Hachi. When we got married, like, it's just been a joy to have someone along with me in the journey. Especially, like I was saying, I was playing overseas a lot. And it can feel very isolating. I think a lot of people have misconceptions about what it means to be a professional soccer player. It is, well, especially past years in the VSL, it was not glamorous at all.
No, especially, that's a whole nother episode.
We're not going to get there. but I'll just say me and Hatch have had our fair share of hardships.
Yes.
And have been better for it and become really flexible and adaptable people. And I'd say we're on the other side of that. And it's been fun. Didn't necessarily think we would get to be here on this side of it. But it's just great. Matt is proud of me no matter what. I'm definitely my biggest critic. So Matt, the rest of my family, just to get like a hug from them after the game. It's funny, my brother is also my younger brother was a goalkeeper and is a goalkeeper coach. So I'll text him and like get his actual like technical analysis. But everyone else, I just want like unconditional love. And then him, Micah is his name, gives me like the truth. it's been great. And then I was able to go to the World Cup, and he came, my sister came, mom came. So my family's believed in me more than I probably believed in myself, and have always kind of known that I would be here, even though I was like, really? I didn't think so. So it's kind of our whole journey as a family. So it's great just seeing how proud they are of me and how much they love the Spirit. They're big Hatch fans, as they should be.
I'm so honored.
But yeah, it's a whole family affair. They watch all the games, travel a ton. And it's just fun that it can bring us so much joy as a family.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the Bledsoe family is the best. They're awesome. Yeah. So fun.
But nobody supports Hatch like Jeff does.
No, Jeff, he was just one of the first ones since we got married 5 years ago, which seems crazy. But yeah, I would just say ditto to everything that Aubrey just said. Like, having a support system that's going to unconditionally love you no matter what happens on the pitch is just super important, especially when your career is maybe not going the way you want it to, or you just have those highs and lows. Like, you're gonna get that hug, you're gonna get that I love you after, no matter what. And it's really fun to have other teammates on the team who are married and have supportive husbands or partners. I think we all have great partners because they're all friends. And we call it the husband's club.
Are they forced to be friends, or are they genuine
friends?
No,
they're genuinely friends. Like, when we're on away trips, they'll try to hang out. Most of the times they'll just watch the games together. Matt and Cameron came over to our house for the last away game, and Jeff made salmon for them. Aubrey's Matt said, hey, my house next, we're gonna have a barbecue or something, or cook out. They're all friends of their own free will.
Yeah, Jeff is always looking for golf buddies too.
Yes, surprise,
I was just gonna
surprise.
Say that. Yeah, does your husband golf? Does he go with
he's
Jeff?
He's the most avid golfer. So it was funny, last road trip, it was raining, so all the Matt, my husband, and another teammate's partner bailed. Jeff went alone.
Yes. Jeff's very, very committed to golf. And everyone knows it, which is fun. We're super grateful for Aubrey's awesome. Matt. Also you, Matt.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Yeah. Must be the name. Yeah. But Obs, we're just super grateful that you took the time to chat with us today. I always knew you're great, but even just like hearing your story and hearing a little bit more about the details of your life is really fun to hear. As we close up, I have one last question. Matt, did you have anything else that you wanted to add before I ask my one last question?
No, there's so much good info in here. You go ahead. I think I'm good. Thank you, though.
All right. My one last question for you, Obs, is just for any of our young listeners out there who are maybe thinking about being goalkeepers or are goalkeepers, what advice would you give them as they're starting out their careers to be the next Aubrey Kingsbury?
Aww. Don't be afraid to make mistakes. I think that's hugely important as goalkeepers, where the expectation is almost perfection. The more mistakes you make, the more you can learn. So the quicker you can improve and get better. So I always tell people, like, you know, you can see the goal. That's one less way that opponents can score on you in the future. So yeah, I hate getting scored on. Hate. It never gets easy. Gets easier, I mean. But I'll only let that, like, anger kind of motivate me to do better, and not, like, to beat myself down. So, yeah, the quicker you can learn, the better. So don't be afraid of making mistakes. And, yeah, bounce back and get better for it.
Amazing advice.
Wonderful advice. Well, thank you so much again. We really appreciate it. And I'll see you tomorrow.
Thank you. Yes. This was fun. Thanks for having
me. Aubrey, thank you so much. You're such a great person. Thanks for coming on. I really appreciate
thank
it.
Thank you. Thanks, everyone, for listening.
Thank you.
We really appreciate all of you listening. We're super happy with all the feedback that we've got, whether it's good, bad, all of it. We love
it. If it's bad, don't do it. Don't leave a review if it's bad.
No, we can handle it. We want to get better.
Yes, we do.
So keep giving us the feedback, or if there's certain guests that you would love to hear on, let us know. We'll do our best to get them on. Keep giving us ratings and reviews. That really helps us. So we appreciate you all. This wouldn't be possible without you. So thanks again.
DITTO.
Ditto.